We are the champions at hacking. What do language models and elephants have in common? And start spreading the news. I'm securing today. These stories and much more on today's episode of MSP Dispatch.
This episode is presented by OIT VoIP. Enhance your clients' communication abilities with our VoIP solution, featuring integrated billing, on-demand training, and live US support. Collaborate seamlessly with Microsoft Teams integration and put your entire phone system in your pocket with MobileX. Improve your offerings and increase profitability with reliable service for 1/10 of the average MSP acquisition cost. To learn more, visit oit.co or dial 844-CALL-OIT.
Good morning and welcome to the August 15th episode of MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. I'm Ray Orsini, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Tony Francisco. How you doing, Tony?
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Eyebrows on fleek. I've got Riz. That's what the kids are saying now. I've got Riz. Not to be confused. Yeah. I've got Riz. How the heck are you doing, brother? Talk to me.
I'm doing pretty fantastic. I watch on my AR, my X-Real AR glasses, I watch The Sound of Music this weekend, and that's the best way to experience Julie Andrews.
It's like Thunderdome, but Sound of Music style. It's like, it's
exactly,
you're in there.
Exactly. And I think my next one will be Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And do you remember the dolphins from Hitchhiker's Guide?
Yes.
Okay, so the whole thank you for all the fish, the dolphins yes. were very intelligent, yes. and, you know, they were aliens. So apparently there's this report.
With the whales falling down.
Right, the whales are fucking idiots. No, actually, there's an opportunity for a dolphin right there. So the reason I bring this up is because Phil, our producer, found an article saying that dolphin language was reverse engineered, and it turns out they're actually just saying a bunch of foul language. When we're cursing and we're covering with dolphins, it's the dolphins cursing covering our curse words. How beautiful is that?
That is hilarious. But I mean, we're doing
it's
under
completely
the FCC.
Fake, but yeah, yeah, I know. Some things are too good to be true, man. I mean,
I was like episode 140. That's where we tell you how deep this is, kind of like a Back to the Future when they're doing these little snippets, the breadcrumbs from the other movies or the steps forward. No, it's totally fake.
No, and I think my favorite line from the whole article is marine biologists in Miami have translated a Gulf dialect, because dolphins don't just have languages, they have dialects, of dolphins' communication language called Dolphinese. I mean,
Dolphinese. I think Phil, our producer, has mastered Dolphinese with the show.
Yeah, he absolutely has. And we give him all the opportunities, like when we do the stories, like we're about to
do
right now.
Right now we do.
Let's do it. Let's fucking get to it. And my first story in security, Lapsus hackers elevate SIM swapping attacks, written by Yonit Lasku for Bleeping Computer. The Lapsus extortion group, primarily composed of young members in the UK and Brazil, has catapulted crime's sophistication through techniques like SIM swapping, targeting high-profile organizations such as Microsoft, Cisco, and Uber. The U.S. government's comprehensive report delves into the group's activities spanning 2021 to 2022, including both their innovative and intricate approaches. By exploiting SIM swapping, the hackers ingeniously hijacked victims' phone numbers, granting them entry into internal networks and enabling the theft of sensitive source code and proprietary data. The group further extended their tactics by leveraging insiders within targeted companies and utilizing fraudulent emergency disclosure requests to advance their agenda. While the effectiveness was notable, Lapsus encountered difficulties in environments fortified with advanced security measures. The eventual outcome of their activities culminated in a series of significant arrests, underlying the necessity for reinforced security protocols, the transition away from vulnerable SMS-based authentication, and more collaborative efforts with law enforcement agencies. Tony, I know this is going to be news to you. Using SMS for MFA is bad. Okay, just letting you know, it's bad.
Okay. So So here's my question. So we have SIM attacks, and are we talking about SIM cards from the cellular perspective, and how are eSIMs going to accommodate that? I firsthand have been sitting at a dinner that I was invited to. I totally just kind of hijacked and just said, let me tag along. There's free food, pizza. I'm in.
You'd never do that.
Work with you guys. And so I'm listening. I'm very quietly sitting in the corner. I'm not joking. I'm quiet. It's odd for a lot of people right now. I'm quietly sitting in the corner, eating this free pizza, pretending like I work there. And I hear this conversation about one of the employees saying, you know, that she gets these weird people answer the phone when people call, and anyway, long story short, I said, let me guess, and I tracked it down. It's only when your husband calls you, and here's what's going on. She says, yes. I said, your SIM card has been duplicated, and they're receiving. So what she starts doing is texting him right after I say, all of your texts are being seen by them. I just want to point this out. So she texts, our SIM card has been duplicated. We need to cancel. Make sure the new password is, and literally says the password on. I'm laughing. Like I said, okay, I need to hold your hand through this one. So I'm going to repeat. What did I say? Oh yeah. Everything that happens on your phone is being seen by these third parties, plural, because it's probably not just one. It's probably multiple.
Right.
And so I said, what you need to do right now is you need to make a phone call. Not a FaceTime, not a man in the middle, but an actual phone call saying what for your husband to do. And it turns out I was right. The point I'm trying to make is that this, and that was, oh my gosh, that was over a year ago. And I've been talking about this for years. These man in the middle attacks can happen, and we've all heard about them. But the replication of the endpoint, the SIM card that you're referring to right now, is going to happen more and more and more. And the first, right before that occurs, there's the authentication layer, the MFA, the 2FA, the SMS. Like, is this actually you? Sure, because you don't have to duplicate that endpoint. You could be at any endpoint saying, yes, this is me, no problem. But my question to you, Ray, is how do we educate people on everything? What's the answer? What is the answer? Go, you've got 10 seconds.
So here's, thanks. So no, but here's my thing though. I think the pushback should be on the service provider, right? How many places have you logged in? I'll use Yealink for example. And yes, as I know it's Yealink. Don't freaking correct me, it's my show. So I'm giving that to the audience out there. So Yealink phones, when you get the phone by default, it has admin as a username and password. Pretty common for most devices. But as soon as you log in, it says in a big bright yellow banner across the top, you're using an insecure password. Click this to change your password. Well, it's not like the banks and all these other organizations don't know SMS MFA is bad. This is not news. You could have watched us last April or April of last year. We were talking about the exact same thing. This is not news. How hard would it be to tell the clients, and I get there's reasons for having SMS MFA. Some places don't support FIDO, they don't support SSO, whatever. I get it. But if you're going to allow it, at least warn the user that they're entering dangerous waters. I know why they don't want to do it. They don't want to make a barrier to entry and then have the user say, oh, my platform's insecure, I'm going to go somewhere else. But I think when I go to Bank of America, I found that Bank of America supports FIDO by mistake. I was pissed that it was only SMS MFA. And it was like, I forgot what I was doing. And it was a customer service rep that's like, yeah, you can use your key, your, what's the freaking USB key?
YubiKey?
I was talking about. Thank YubiKey. You, YubiKey. I was saying half the word. I just couldn't remember the other half of the word. So yeah, the YubiKey, right? So, you know, that's the thing. They were like, yeah, you can totally use that. I'm like, ah, okay, great. Why aren't you making that like first choice? Why aren't you making that, you know, something? I don't know. The point is, I think it's the service providers. I like to hear from the MSPs. If you think the service providers are at fault here, yell at them and also tell us so we can shame them publicly, because that's, you know, that's how we roll. But you know what I love, Tony? It's that no matter what we do, nobody ever forgets. And not forgetting is a good thing, right?
It's machine unlearning that's the problem. In my first story from VentureBeat.com, Machine Unlearning, the Critical Art of Teaching AI to Forget. Machine learning models have difficulty forgetting data, posing challenges when using outdated or private information. Continually retraining models due to data usage is inefficient, leading to the emergence of machine unlearning, which is teaching the AI to forget it. This becomes especially critical as lawsuits related to data misuse increase. Current machine learning models are like black boxes, making it hard to erase specific dataset influences. OpenAI, among other entities, has faced criticism over their training data. Privacy issues arise with attacks revealing data sources used for model training. Machine unlearning aims to alleviate these concerns. Currently, removing problematic datasets requires expensive and time-consuming retraining. Recent research seeks more efficient unlearning methods without the need of full retraining. As this field grows, challenges like efficiency, standardization, and privacy persist. Google's recent machine unlearning challenge and increasing legal focus on AI usage signify the field's importance. For businesses using machine languages, monitoring machine unlearning developments and adopting responsible AI practices are crucial. So, Ray, this literally goes against everything you and I have been talking about for so long. It's talking about machines doing what people can't do, and they can take that data and through analytics, through the sheer reporting of the bubbling up of that data in an effective, efficient way, we are going to be able to do so much so fast and just accelerate humankind. But at the same time, we're saying, oh, we need to unlearn a lot of stuff and we need to do it as efficient and effective as possible. What's the balance here? Where are we going with this? I feel like I'm confused on behalf of everyone else out there. What's the answer?
The answer is we stop being smart at 20. And the reason I say that, okay, so your mental plasticity, right? Your ability to both learn and unlearn things. Sub 20 years old, we're very adept at it. That's why we're better at learning language. That's why we're better at learning functions and concepts. We're just better at that. We can pivot much more easily. Whereas, you know, you get to your 30s, the 40s and beyond, we have habits that are really hard for us to unlearn. It stands to reason something with a never-ending memory is going to have some of those challenges. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe that's something Phil can cover on AI Roundup in a future episode, because this is right in his vein. Or maybe he can give us a segment on Friday for our AI Roundup segment to answer that. But honestly, I don't know. I do know that people are getting more, that the organizations are becoming more overt about the disclaimers. So for example, HubSpot, last night I was configuring it for MMN, and they have a chat copilot-ish type thing with AI, and it's giving you insights. It's absolutely AI driven. And when you enable it, there's a checkbox that says, I will not give private or personal data to the AI, because I understand that that data is not isolated. They didn't say isolated, but private. And that's the exact kind of disclaimer I'm talking about with the BOA MFA thing, right? That's the exact disclaimer I'm looking for. You can use this, but you're stepping into dangerous water. And they may go back and just text their husband with the compromised device, the password they want to use anyway, but at least the effort's been made, right? Like, you know, at some point, you know, whose fault's it going to be?
So speaking of water, and I think this is in line with what you're saying, this is a maturity issue. And for those of you who don't know, Greenland sharks, I love dropping a fact once in a while, Greenland sharks live up to 500 years old, process that, and they don't reach their sexual maturity until they're 150 years old. I want you to process that for a moment. 150 years old is when they're like, hey, what's going on? How are you doing? Is this just a maturity issue? And talking about getting in that particular the deep water with this, is it something that we need to wait a long time for this to mature? Are we in that that infancy stage where we are so critical about something that just frankly hasn't had time to develop?
I think this is, unfortunately, with the way I think Spielberg was right, and we're learning from Jurassic Park. Yes, it's taken 30 years, but we're learning from it. That we're being more and more cautious looking less at can we do it, more like should we do it. This is a time in history where things are moving so quickly, but we understand that we could easily misstep and cause significant damage, like Skynet, or something more reasonable. But seriously, I mean, you can cause a lot of damage making the wrong steps with AI and the information that's tied into, which is why they've been so cautious about letting AI go to the open internet and do all these other things. We're being cautious about it, and I respect that. I like that they're looking at these things. Yes, it may be a little earlier than where any of the impacts could happen yet, but I think this is the time we're supposed to be having those conversations.
But you know what's needed? Strategy. That's what's needed. Strategy. If they had a strategy on this from the beginning, it would be amazing. The good news is there are people, even groups of people, even large groups, even cities that have a strategy. Right, Ray?
Actually, you're right. It's a good story for once. In my third top security story, New York's first ever cyber strategy, written by Jeffrey Schwartz for Dark Reading. Governor Kathy Hochul's groundbreaking $600 million cybersecurity initiative for New York marks a significant shift in digital defense. This innovative approach aims to bolster critical infrastructure and digital assets through collaboration and strategic alliances. Hochul's cybersecurity focus comes in the wake of a disruptive ransomware attack on Suffolk County's services, impacting over 1 million residents. Presented at NYU Tandon School of Engineering, her strategy emphasizes coordinated efforts with federal authorities and local governments to effectively counteract the growing wave of cyber threats. Leveraging insights from her congressional tenure over a decade ago, Hochul underscores the escalating nature of cyber attacks. Key elements of the initiative, including forming an industrial control system cyber assessment team and establishing the Joint Security Operations Center. Building on 2022's legislation designed to enhance energy grid cybersecurity, this blueprint allocates significant resources to fortify cybersecurity across various fronts. Governor Hochul's visionary approach unifies the state's response against mounting cyber threats, embodying collaboration, resilience, and adaptability. The strategic push propels New York residents towards a robust state of cybersecurity preparedness. Tony, you know, it sounds like the Big Apple's taking a bite out of cybercrime, and I'm all for it. What do you think about this? What's your take? Is it a right step forward, or is it, yay, another freaking agency?
Okay. So here is my, for those of you who know me, and there's Ray and I are extremely connected in the industry. I am no sugar added when I hear people talk. And the number one term that I use, and this is on behalf of the initiated out there, I say, oh, it's an empty suit. Meaning there's a suit, but there's really no one in it. There's nothing in there. It has the appearance of some type of authority. My concern is, in this particular announcement, as idealistic and I want to praise immediately, if you can't explain it, you don't understand it. But once you explain, or once you understand the anatomy of it, the mechanics of how it fits together, here's the stack, here's the connective tissue in between, then you can control it, you can manipulate it, because you understand how it all works. Right now, we're all struggling to explain how security should fit in a stack, let alone how to deploy it, let alone how to scope it to scale to something such a magnitude as an entire city. So I, as much as I would love to give a tip of the hat, as much as I would love to give the subtle nod, as much as I would love to give huge praise to them for moving forward on this, I just don't see how it's possible. I would love to hear, we are going to start with this. Now, the this part, everyone listening to this right now will say, ooh, that's a good starting point. That is the foundation of all the things above it. As opposed, we're going to start with that. Well, that is going to change in the next 6 months, and it has nothing to do with the base foundation. So I didn't hear that. So I may be speaking out of turn, but I'm just going to, as the I say often, get the turds out on the table. We're all wanting to hear it. I would like to know how they're going to do this. Is this just, hey, we're parroting the next political keywords because this is what resonates with certain persons? I would love to know what that base foundation is going to be. And then hopefully, if it's done correctly, the rest of the United States could do the exact same thing.
Sounds nice. my concern is this. I worry about too many chefs in the kitchen, right? You have CISA, which, you know, has their role, and then you have the National Cybersecurity Initiative out of the White House, and then you have each state doing their own thing, as that is the way America is designed, right? You have federal, then state, and then municipal, absolutely. But everybody's designing, like, they're all defining their methods for cybersecurity, which is very, very dangerous, right? Imagine, the reason I say this is because, in my opinion, we should have the equivalent of a national building code, right? Or a national electrical code, which these things exist. And then you have state and local level things that go above and beyond, but they don't supersede the NEC, right? You're not taking, you know, a 20 gauge wire to run 3 volts through it. Well, for one, you're going to have way too much loss, but you get what I'm saying. So my thing is this, I think that all these organizations are fantastic. I would be cautious about instituting any of these that didn't have a component of immediate collaboration with the national entity, the federal entity, or figure out a way how they're going to overlap.
So just to be clear, what you're saying is, hey, listen, we're going to have a solution that may be very sound, but it's through a very specific lens and not taking into account all the other players involved. It's not a collaborative, holistic solution that could be a very, very strong scope to scale solution across the board. You're saying that you have concerns about just this one particular lens that they're addressing this from?
Absolutely. And I think I can distill it down to this very cross-applicable analogy. It's like when you're in school. You remember those days of like middle school, high school, where it felt like no teacher understood that you also had homework and assignments from another teacher. So you felt completely overwhelmed because it felt like each one of them was giving you a full day's worth of work. That's what I'm trying to prevent here, because if it becomes so cumbersome as it is today, that's why SMS MFA even exists, because if you make it too cumbersome, nobody's going to use it, even if the rules say so. Right? I don't want a seatbelt or a speeding situation where, yeah, the limit's 55, but you can probably get away with 60 or 90 if you know how many officers are on the street at any given time. But, you know, with that, I think we should go in the notables before I say something else that incriminates me. So
let's do it. Let's get in the notables. And in my first notable mention from bleepingcomputer.com, Microsoft Exchange updates have been pulled after breaking non-English installations. Microsoft has withdrawn its August security updates for Exchange Server from Windows updates after discovering they disrupt Exchange on non-English installations. Released on August 8th, these updates addressed 6 vulnerabilities. However, issues arose when the updates were applied to non-English servers, specifically German. Microsoft acknowledges the problem, attributing the localization issue to the installer. If applied, the update halts and reverses changes, disabling Exchange Server Windows services. Microsoft provided a temporary solution for affected systems and recommends English version users to continue updating for protection against vulnerabilities. And in my second notable mention from Engadget.com, America's original hacking supergroup creates a free framework to improve app security. The Cult of the Dead Cow, that's CDC, a renowned hacking group, introduced an open source tool, Veilid, for creating secure apps. Unveiled at DEF CON, Veilid allows users to reject data collection and tracking, pushing back against commercialization of the internet. CDC emphasizes it's a nonprofit intention, contrasting itself from events like Black Hat. Veilid's foundation is described as a fusion between Tor, a privacy-centric browser, and IPFS, an open-source internet protocol system. The tool's security strengthens with increased use. Veilid uses a unique cryptographic system, ensuring evolving security. Veilid Chat, resembling Signal but requiring no phone number, is its inaugural app. CDC, known for pioneering hacktivism and contributing to Tor's development, seeks a more private and ad-free internet.
In my first notable mention, Synchro launches new MSP partner plan, written by Ty Trumbull for Channel E2E. Synchro, a leader in professional services automation, PSAs, and remote monitoring and management, RMM solutions, for managed service providers, has introduced a new advanced team plan. Tailored for MSPs with multiple technicians, this plan offers improved workflow, organization, and automation flexibility. In addition, the premium tier features encompass Power BI reports for in-depth data insights, expanded automation capabilities, enhanced remote access, and ticket workflow enhancements, enhancing managerial oversight. Notably, MSPs can now schedule personalized troubleshooting sessions with Synchro technicians through the program. Additional benefits include enriched SplashTop support, seamless integration with Azure AD for contact syncing, real-time ticket automations, and Power BI analytics. The team plan, available at $180 per user per month, amplifies Synchro's commitment to empowering MSPs for enhanced profitability and efficiency. In my second notable mention, Evil Proxy's Phishing Surge exploits Microsoft 365 executive accounts, written by Elizabeth Montalbano for Dark Reading. A widespread evil proxy phishing campaign is sweeping across the globe, affecting over 100 organizations and 120,000 phishing emails sent between March and June. The primary objective of the campaign is to breach executive accounts within Microsoft 365, executed through adept brand impersonation and intricate multi-step infection strategies. Researchers from Proofpoint revealed that the ongoing campaign utilizes a combination of phishing tactics, including brand impersonation, scan blocking, and multi-step infection chain. And with the remarkable skill, attackers exploit Evil Proxy's reverse proxy and cookie injection techniques, adeptly circumventing multi-factor authentication protocols, which in turn provides them with the means to gain control over cloud accounts belonging to high-level executives. In my resource of the week, Backblaze sees an uptick in 8 and 10 terabyte drive failures, written by Chris Meller for Blocks and Files. Backblaze, a cloud storage provider, noted increased failure rates in its 8 terabyte and 10 terabyte disk drives. The sample rate was a disk drive population of 241,297 drives, which the company monitors failure rates on based on capacity, model, and manufacturer. The second quarter of 2023 showed an average annualized failure rate of 2.28%, up from 1.54% in Q1 2023. Notably, the 8 and 10 terabyte drives experienced high average failure rates, with the 10 terabyte drives showing the highest rates. Analyzing a three-year trend, Backblaze found an increase in AFRs for older drives aged 5 years or more, and the likely factor behind this is the age of the drives. The full report will be listed in the show notes below. In our feedback from the YouTubes, Crazy Innova says, "What's an Intel CPU without the bugs nowadays?" I can't say I disagree.
There are plenty of amazing upcoming events taking place across the community, so let's see what's happening this week. And today, an in-person event, Kaseya and Datto Sales and Marketing Series in Detroit, Michigan. Tomorrow, August 16th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, MSP Insiders presented by Blumira. And also starting today through the 17th, another in-person event, 7-Figure MSP Live in Chicago, Illinois. And coming from the MSP Media Network this week, we have, later today at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, another installment of Pitch It Vendor Spotlight featuring Aquila Clouds and Sales Maturity. Also later today at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Wins and Losses Episode 5. And tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, AI Roundup is back with Episode 23. And as always, on Tuesdays and Fridays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, MSP Dispatch presented by the MSP Media Network.
Hi, I'm Aaron, and I'm a jobaholic. We all have something in common. We all have a worst job story. Each episode, I'll welcome one guest to share their most insane worst job story. And in return, I'll share one of mine. Join me the first Friday of every month for new episodes of 38 at 38.
So how'd you like today's episode? If you liked it, hit the thumbs up button. And if you didn't, go and hit it in 3 times, 5 times, 7 times. You know the deal. And if you want to hear more, go and hit that subscribe button on the YouTubes or your favorite podcatcher. Did you know we also have a Discord where we post stories all week? You can propose your own stories and even vote on which ones we'll cover. As my friend Rich Mankey says, make sure to tell a friend. Also, be sure to follow us on social media at MSP Media TV. Have any questions? Email news@mspmedia.tv for answers on the next episode, or leave us a voicemail, 833-MSP-Network. Tony, we laughed, we loved, we flipped. We learned about sharks and their sexual acumen after 150 years.
Sound of Music, Thunderdome, like,
I mean, if these hills aren't alive with the Sound of Music, I don't know what is. That's all I'm saying.
Man, these hills are alive with the sound of, like, I would say 30% of the audience who had those terrors about too much high school, you just invoked the same neurotic, like, my ransomware and all the security. I'm like, and they're like, So to the 30%, thank you.
It's like when you sit there and you do this, like, immediately the Jets and the Sharks come to mind, right? It's like, good show. But with that, it's a good show. I appreciate every one of you for watching. Until next time, thanks for all the fish.
140 episodes, everyone. Take care. Be safe.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
But for now, Tony, you're taking us to the Big Apple. You're taking us to the Land of Liberty. Tony's broken. What, did I start playing music? What happened?
I think he threw into the wrong story.
Yes.
He's got machine
learning. Oh, my bad. That explains the
So I'm now going to clean the sweat from my brow because I'm like, I did the wrong story.
No, that was last week. That was like, now it's
that was at the season.
So I threw to my own story. That's fucking fantastic.
So I got you, for the B-Real people out there, I forget sometimes and I just do the wrong story, and then I think they let me just go on because it sounds just so magical until the end. They go, yeah, this is the wrong story, Tony. I go, oh, okay. And then I do the next story after that like a complete disaster. So now
the only challenge with that is when you, like, you do my story by mistake and you sound really good at it, and I'm like, fuck it, I don't want to do it now. Like, I'm not following Mick Jagger. Don't put that shit on me. Like, I'm following Ozzy. Like, no, dude, that's not what I'm doing this for.
Okay. We gotta do.
I'll throw it to you.